Choir directors are creative, resourceful, dedicated, and sometimes completely out of ideas. Not to worry, the Choir Ninja Podcast is here with solutions you never saw coming. Get ready for some training, wisdom, and inspiration from the masters. Let Ryan Guth guide your journey to becoming a choir ninja.
What's the best part about being a ninja? The gear. It's the nunchucks, the katanas, the throwing stars. It's the same for choir ninjas. The difference between an ordinary and a masterful performance may come down to your most basic and essential piece of equipment, your music folder. My Music Folders creates a superior product, and they do it with a smile. And because they are friends of the podcast, they have a killer deal for you right now. Get the bulk purchase price break without having to buy in bulk. So whether you have to restock your entire classroom or you just need to replace a few folders, you will get the best possible pricing on the best possible product. So like a ninja, sneak on over to mymusicfolders.com and use the code NINJA when you check out.
Today's episode is brought to you by SightReadingFactory.com. Do you hate teaching sight singing? Do you have a carbon footprint the size of Sasquatch because you run off endless sheets of sight singing examples only to hear your students groan in agony when it's time to sight sing in rehearsal? SightReadingFactory.com is a web-based tool that will compose custom sight reading examples based on specifications that you choose. Your choir will actually enjoy sight singing, and so will you. Plus, you will get back hours of your life and finally feel like the choir ninja you were destined to be. If that isn't cool enough, you can add student accounts that link directly to your teacher dashboard so your kids can practice or even take recorded assessments from home. As a sponsor of this show, SightReadingFactory.com has an exclusive deal just for you, Choir Nation. When you purchase their insanely affordable one-year subscription, you will unlock 10 free student accounts just for using the promo code NINJA at checkout. That's Ninja, N-I-N-J-A. So head over to SightReadingFactory.com. That's SightReadingFactory.com. And don't forget to use the promo code NINJA at checkout to unlock your 10 student accounts absolutely free. Hey there, Choir Nation. This is Ryan Guth with the Choir Ninja Podcast, and I am here with my good friend Ryan Main. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, I'm doing great, Ryan. Thank you. And I'm sure Choir Nation is ready to hear from you today because Ryan is my friend who is an expert. And I'm going to call him an expert because Ryan is able to do this and sustain himself. He is an expert on all things composition related when it comes to sort of the business side. You know, he's been around the block a little while, has some pieces published, but most importantly, you know, he is an entrepreneur in the composition world. And I think a lot of people put all of the weight on artistry, and that's the most important part, and then less on maybe execution of marketing, maybe understanding the people that you're serving. What are the particular routes that you could go down as a composer? And Ryan has gone down some of those roads, and I consider him an expert because you know what? He knows a hell of a lot more than I do about this about this subject. And if you don't know Ryan's work, you absolutely should head over to Ryan Main. .com. It's spelled like Main Street. And check out what he's got going on over there. He is premiered a piece with our other good friend Danny Gutierrez of Reed Academy Singers, who performed at ACDA National this past March. And I got to sit next to Ryan and listen to his premiere, which was outstanding. And so, you know, I consider Ryan an expert because he knows a hell of a lot more than me, and hopefully he knows a hell of a lot more than you all. So he'll be able to help you to understand what it takes maybe to be a composer, when maybe you should call yourself a composer, when you feel like that is the right title for you, because I know it wasn't always the right title for Ryan. And then what are those
those particular distribution paths that you might want to go down in exploring whether composing is something that you'd like to do. So, Ryan, thank you for being here, and I appreciate you taking your time to dedicate to Choir Nation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and that was an amazing introduction. Thanks, man.
Oh well, of course. Well, Ryan, I'm one of your biggest fans, and I certainly would encourage Choir Nation to get their notepad out and listen to what you got to say. Ryan's first. His first episode was How to Prevent Choir Zombie Syndrome, which was like, gosh, maybe a year and a half ago that came out.
Yeah.
So it was really early on. So just search, if you go to choir.ninja and you just search Ryan Main, you'll find not only this episode, but you'll find his first one as well, which was really an amazing episode too. All right, Ryan. So what is the thesis statement here for this episode, you think?
What I would probably say is that there are three main pathways that you can go down if you want to write music and you want to get it out there to the world, and that each of those pathways is valid for different reasons based on where you are in your career. So do you want me to go ahead and talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, go for it.
So there are really three major pathways that you can go if you've got a piece that you want to get out there. Pathway number one is the traditional music publishing route. Pathway number two is the more innovative online-based publishers that kind of serve as an online marketplace, really. And then the final option is to completely self-publish your own music.
Okay, so... Now, you have you done all three of these?
I have done option number one and option number three, and I've done a lot of research on the online marketplaces and ultimately decided on self-publishing, but okay. I think that they all have a lot of merit.
So you have a lot of, you know, sort of entrepreneurial spirit, and you're pretty tech savvy, so it's probably not terribly difficult for you to do number three, but for people that are interested in number one, the traditional publishing route, we'll go there first. We can end with three. What are some of the advantages to going down that route, and what are some of the disadvantages?
Sure. So if you are, let's say that you've never published anything before, maybe you've written some music, but it's mainly only been performed by choirs that you've worked with, you just have this piece that you've created, you felt inspired, and you want it to be out there and getting performances, getting your name out there, and that's where traditional publishing still has the biggest leg up. Traditional publishers can take your piece of music and just blast it out to the public in a way that no other form of publication can do. They've been doing it for decades, and they're really good at it. And it's a really great way to raise your profile. It's also a status
thing, right? It's like almost like I'm published with this publishing company, and it's like, you're automatically like legit.
Yeah, it really is. It's a feather in your cap that you get to have then forever. Even if you write a piece that, let's say, doesn't necessarily sell that well, it's going to get it out there enough that new avenues are going to start to open for you, such as getting commissions. So if you are interested in writing a lot more, then something that you should really consider is taking your first piece to a traditional publisher, just so that they can open up those doors mm-hmm. for you to then go the other routes in the future and bring in some additional income if that's your goal.
Sure. Well, and you'll probably even get the, you know, I don't know, clinician positions and things like that, because I don't know, they're doing this piece at the Allstate convention or something like that too. It seems
absolutely, Absolutely. And so my background, before I started writing for choir, I used to write for wind ensemble, and I have 7 pieces published through traditional publishers. And for a long time, that was just my focus. And when I had my first piece published by a traditional publisher, it just kind of overnight exploded my career. I got commission requests regularly. I went out and directed honor bands, and the benefits of being traditionally published are really tangible, in a way that isn't necessarily a big royalty check every month, because traditional publishing, the regular arrangement for that is that you will get 10% of the sales on all of the sales over time. Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. So that ends up being, you're going to have to sell a lot of volume in order to get back even, you know, the value of your time of composing, not only composing, but, you know, throwing the fishing line out there to see who's going to bite, as far as, you know, because you're probably doing a lot of emailing at that point, doing a lot of sending samples of your work out there. I mean, it's probably a ton mm-hmm. of work for a very little payoff monetarily.
Absolutely. Traditional publishing is not really a music maker. It's not really a money maker in terms of just making a lot of money off of that. Mm-hmm. That particular piece or your time investment in it. It's really something I would encourage composers to think of more like an investment, that I am investing in the future of my composition career by reaping the benefits of this route. And a lot of composers do this. They will use traditional publishing for its benefits, and then turn around and self-publish their next piece. Sure. or go through an innovative online publishing company.
Okay. Great. Are there any other sort of downsides on the traditional publishing route besides the money?
Yeah, so this is something that I ran into. You know, my publishers that I absolutely love, and I still have a great relationship with them. I'm glad that I went down that route. But they will publish pieces that they believe in very much and support them quite a bit and publicize them a lot. And sometimes they'll publish pieces that just kind of barely make the cut, and they won't publicize them and promote them in quite the same way. And mm-hmm. so publishing companies are not required to put your piece on a reading session just because you've gotten the piece published with them. Mm-hmm. They're not required to talk it up to honor choir directors, you know. And so it is entirely possible to get a piece published and then have it die a slow death and eventually become out of print. And sometimes if you're working with a company that there are some companies who are better about this and some who aren't, but it's also possible that they won't give you the rights to your piece back, even if they have decided that they don't want to keep printing it. They won't let you take that the copyright back.
Wow. Okay. And, so you're just handing over this baby, and you're hoping they're gonna parent correctly.
Indeed. Yeah. And so that can be a really tough thing to do as a composer. Sure. You know, sometimes we spend anywhere from a few days to a few weeks, and sometimes months. You know, if you're working on one piece for more than a year, maybe you should pick up the pace. But you know, we spend a lot of time creating something that we really believe in, and it can be very demoralizing to hand that off to somebody and see it go nowhere.
Sure.
And so I think that you have to be careful about how you do that. And one of the best things that you can do for yourself in that process is to take it to as many publishing companies as possible, absolutely as many as possible, and get try to get as many options for yourself as you can, but then also see how they talk about the piece in their communications and evaluate from there who you want to go with, who's going to really get behind your piece and help to make it successful.
So who's the most excited about your piece?
Yeah, and that shouldn't be the only factor. You know, I think you should also look to see who's publishing music like what you've written,
the buyers are gonna the buyers that will like your thing are gonna be there.
Exactly. Yeah. So if I wrote a piece that's geared towards a certain difficulty and a certain voicing, and a certain publishing company really specializes in that, I would definitely give them a harder look. But that's not to say that should be the only consideration.
Sure.
Because, if somebody's really excited about it and they can tell you how they're going to help make this successful, then that should go a long way too.
Great. Now let's move on to innovative e-print publishing companies that are online only.
Sure.
Who are they? Who are they most useful for?
So the innovative online companies are most useful for composers who at least have some kind of profile out there. Let's say that you've already got one piece published through a traditional publisher. Or maybe you wrote a piece and it's getting a really, really, really great response from the directors and choirs that are performing it. You just feel like wherever you publish this, however you publish it, people are going to know about this piece. People are going to tell their friends about this piece. And the word's going to get out there whether somebody's putting it on reading sessions or not. Mm-hmm. I think something that the longer you spend in this field, the better sense you'll start to have for that. Ask yourself as a composer, have you written something that is really innovative? Have you written something that says something new that hasn't really been said before in this voicing or in this difficulty level? Mm-hmm. And if so, then you should start looking beyond traditional publishing, because people will seek that piece out and they will pay the same amount, actually, but you'll make a lot more on it going through something beyond traditional publishing. Innovative online companies offer anywhere from, say, 50% on the sale to 70% typically. And
well, because they have no overhead.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially the companies who don't offer any kind of printing option. They truly have almost no overhead. And that's not to say that they don't create it for themselves by hiring on more staff, mm-hmm. or getting into conferences and reading sessions. But generally speaking, they're spending a lot less in the course of running their business than traditional publishers are.
Sure.
And so they can afford to, and you can make a lot of money going down this route. I know a composer who got a check, their first royalty check from an innovative online publishing company was for $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah. I think over a 6-month period, that's pretty unreal.
Well, that's probably somebody who also has a regular full-time position. Like teaching or something. So they don't, it's not like their full bread and butter, right?
It wasn't in this case, mm-hmm. but it certainly could be, you know, there's nothing to stop someone. If you are a choir director who has arranged a piece for your students, you should consider getting that published. Why not?
Right. Just send it off. Like what's the worst case scenario? You're going to hear no.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually we should circle back at the end and talk about, some tips for doing that.
Great. Now, what is a downside of one of these companies?
The first thing I would point out is one of the same things I mentioned about traditional publishing, which is that if a publishing company really believes in your piece, they're going to push it out there. They're going to market it. They're going to talk it up. It's going to be on the tip of their tongue. And that's really important when you've handed off your work to someone else, that you're handing it off to somebody who believes in it mm-hmm. and wants to see it be successful. Because these companies a lot of times have low overhead or, you know, almost no overhead, they can afford to take on a lot of pieces. And so I think that if you're looking at publishing with one of these companies, that you should click around a little bit on their website, look at their catalog and see if you want your music on the same digital shelf with the other pieces that are there.
Sure.
Is that where you see do you see similar value?
Well, also seems like you're going to have to do a little bit of co-marketing too, because of the fact that there's so much potential to be for those shelves to be crowded that mm-hmm. that they might not have the ability to market it for you. Maybe in the same way a traditional publisher would, because they have less crowding on the shelves. So you may need right. to be able to pick up some of their slack marketing it as well. So maybe, like you were saying earlier, if you have a little bit of a name, mm-hmm. that's probably helpful. So there's going to be a little bit of promotion, it sounds like, you're going to have to do on your own as well.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And that's really important no matter what route you go, is to also get out there and advocate for your music. If you've been asked to direct an honor choir, can program your piece. That's not selfish. That's just a really cool experience for your students sure. in that honor choir to get that experience of working with the director or the composer. And 100 other ways. Or have a Skype session with choirs that are performing your piece. If you hear about it, reach out to the director.
Right.
You know, that's stuff I think always going to be important, but probably more important when you're not working with traditional publishers.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about self-publishing.
Sure.
Now, who is the ideal candidate for self-publishing?
First off, it's probably someone who's really stubborn, who has really thick skin and a lot of patience. And if it's not clear by now, I'm definitely referring to myself. But self-publishing is really ideal for someone who has at least some profile. So that's similar to our last option. Somebody who I think also maybe has written a piece that they feel like really has legs and can really get out there mm-hmm. just by its own merit. But also somebody who has some entrepreneurial spirit. That is really who this route is for. Somebody who doesn't mind sinking several hours into website design or sinking several hours into sifting through different design options for the cover of your sheet music. There's a lot of little details that publishing companies take care of for you that you're going to have to do yourself.
Sure.
If you want to self-publish, and there are extra benefits there. But the question is that I think people should ask themselves before they go down this route is, does it sound exciting to you to own your own self-publishing sheet music company? Mm-hmm. Or does it just sound daunting? And if it's the latter, you should really take a harder look at your second option.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense because I mean, I can tell you, I mean, I'm in the online marketing company, you know, or the online marketing company business myself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I hate all things website. I got to tell you, you know, but it is part of doing this podcast thing. So I just had to do it because I knew the rewards of being able to do the podcast and be able to have the show notes and an online presence was well worth it. But man, you gotta like that pain. That's because that can be if you're not a tech savvy person, you know, trying to figure out your shopping cart situation and setting up ways so people aren't totally ripping you off completely. Because I mean, I'm assuming you're gonna occasionally get some boneheads that are gonna order one piece and then copy it for their whole choir.
Right, and that's something that I've seen a lot of composers who've gone down this route complain about. And so I actually I stole my solution from another Choir Nation member, Braden Ayers,
sure,
who self-publishes and is really a brilliant composer. And he does an online site license. So you go to his website, and for $50, you can purchase a license to print off as many copies for your choir as you want. And I think it's kind of a perfect solution. Mm-hmm. It's not going to keep anyone from taking that PDF and copying it and emailing it to their friends. But one of the added benefits to self-publishing is that it also gives you the opportunity to build relationships with your customers in a way that you can't do with any of the other options.
Sure.
And so I found that that is one of the absolute best deterrents to any kind of abuse with my intellectual property.
Where they've humanized you.
Yeah. I send a personal email to each person who buys my sheet music after they've bought it. Not just for that reason. It's also because one of the reasons I got into self-publishing is I wanted to be building those relationships. Mm-hmm. I mourned that loss when I went the traditional publishing route, that I knew my music was getting performed out there, but I didn't know who was doing it.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a crazy, weird feeling when you've worked a really long time to get to that place. Suddenly you feel disconnected from the process.
Well, why do you think I started the Facebook group? You know, I mean, I was sitting in front of the microphone for a year without a clue who was listening. And I know I was getting these thousands of downloads a month, but I'm like, who the hell is listening to me? You know? And so, I mean, there's that ability to serve your audience better when you know who the hell they are. So I think that's really important. And you know what? It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but another advantage is that maybe they create such a relationship with you that they're like, you know what? We actually just want to have you commissioned. We want to have you commissioned to do a piece.
Yeah. And that has definitely been my experience. That since I've gone the self-publishing route, not only have my sheet music sales gradually ticked up over time, but also my commissions are gradually ticking up over time.
Sure.
And if I stay on the path that I'm on, this will probably be something that could be full-time, just my full-time job in a few years at this rate.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, hey, hopefully we can help here. Choir Nation is a forward-thinking group of people, very positive. Obviously, you know, Ryan has been on board with Choir Nation for a very long time. He was a listener before he was on the show for 2 years, you know, before he was on the show. So, so I know that they're going to maybe help you a little bit as well. But what am I missing? I mean, I guess the income potential, like we were just talking about, I mean, it's like 100%. I mean, you're not splitting with anybody else. You have some overhead costs and obviously the cost that it takes, the time that you're being compensated for to write a piece of music. But once you write it, it becomes an asset. Like, it's always there.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a very motivating thing, I think. Not just that it becomes an asset, but those assets accumulate over time. So if you just keep writing, you'll eventually have a library. And people will keep seeking out the first piece that you wrote and the second and the third. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think it doesn't matter if you think that you're the best composer in the world. And in fact, that's just something I want to state anyway. You know, I don't think that I am. I just love doing it. And I love the process afterwards as well. Sure. Of getting out there and working with choirs that are performing my music. That is maybe the single most motivating thing to me. It's what I love doing, is working with choirs that are singing my music. And if that's something that excites you, you should do this. You should keep pursuing it.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you. I know one of the hurdles maybe is the, you know, for people to go with the online thing as far as how they're going to buy their music, is maybe established relationships with, whether it's like local music distributors or whether you have an account with one of the big crazy music distributors, and mm-hmm. that's just who your school district buys from, or that's who your church right. buys from, and that's like the approved, they're on the approved vendor list and that kind of thing, which is so kind of anti-capitalism, but I mean, I'm kind of totally against, you know, this is the approved vendor list. I'm like, okay, Kim Jong-un, you know, superintendent Kim Jong-un, right? So what do you say to those people who are, you know, I don't know how to even buy something in my current system from a online publisher mm-hmm. or an online self-publisher?
Yeah, that's a real problem. Without a doubt, that is one of the biggest downsides to, I think, going with the innovative online publishing companies, especially if they don't offer printed music that is then sold through retailers, because that is exactly what you outlined, is a situation that happens a lot. And I've run into this. I've had people tell me, I would love to perform your music, but I can only buy through X retail company, or, you know, the retailer in my area.
Sure.
But when you self-publish, this is one of the big benefits, I think, is that you can build relationships with those retailers, and it's really not difficult. You can literally just build an email list and send out a single email to all of them and say, I would like to be in your system as a publisher from which to order.
Yeah.
And that doesn't obligate them or you to anything. It just puts you in their system so that then they know to order from you if something comes in. But I don't even think that that's necessary, because the way that I found out about this option was, I was only offering the digital downloads of my sheet music, and I had retailers call me and say, I've got an order here for your sheet music, what do you want to do? And I had to figure out a solution in those cases. Mm-hmm. And what I eventually settled on is that I'm also going to print music and make that available as well. But retailers, if they get an order, they will get your contact information off your website and call you and say, how do we make this happen?
Sure. Well, there are some really well-known self-published composers that are, they must own a copy machine, and they're in a professional, you know, stapler or something, because I mean, like, when they get a big order, they're running off copies and sticking them in an envelope and sending them out. I mean, these, and we're talking big names in the self-publishing world. So mm-hmm. I mean, I think when there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, and that's so that's actually something I want to talk about, the nuts and bolts of printed music and self-publishing. You know, it definitely, I think, takes that you should have some success rolling. You should be selling digital copies of your sheet music to then start to consider printed music. Mm-hmm. But you can lease a full-blown rocket ship of a copy machine for like $100 a month. And if you get one printed sheet music sale, one normal sized order, it will pay for that month's lease on the copy machine.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, Ryan, is that if you go to a local printer in your area, not a big box retailer that is an office supply store, because I'm just thinking of ways to not crass ways to say that they're going to take you everything you're worth, you know.
But, yeah, it's the markup is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And so how I actually started was exactly that. I went to a local company. It was just a print shop with two guys down the road. Mm-hmm. And said, here's what I want to do. I've got these retailers asking for an order. Can you print this and make this look nice? And will you cut me some slack if I always come to you? And if you just go there in person, have that conversation, they will almost always work with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've had the same thing happen. You know, I had these posters that have been selling like hotcakes on Teachers Pay Teachers. They're like these 10 principles, you know.
Yeah,
posters. I mean, I got this gigantic commissioned check from Teachers Pay Teachers last month, because for whatever reason, everybody and their mom bought these posters. And they're
that's awesome.
And Butch, by the way, if anybody wants a copy of these posters, they're by digital download. They're only $6. You can go on Teachers Pay Teachers and find them, or actually, you can go to choir.ninja under resources and you can find them. They're right there. I decided that I was going to bring some to ACDA, and I went and I wanted to print them out because they're full color. They have a black background, and I know that a lot of people don't want to print black. Well, some of them have black, some of them have white. They alternate white and black, which I think is a thing I'm going to change soon. But I went to Staples, and then I went to the local Minuteman Press in my in my town. Staples was going to charge. It was like $200, and I was going to get and I was going to get 10 sets of these posters.
Oh my gosh!
And if you like, and I'm pretty sure the order from, I mean, that 10 sets. What am I gonna do with 10 sets? Right. And then I went to Minuteman Press, and it was like 1/20th of that. Like, it was ridiculous. And so like, if you go to these little guys that are like entrepreneurs themselves, not like the copy machine attendant wearing the red shirt. Like, if you go to the people that are the owner of the Minuteman Press or the local franchise or independent printer in your area, I mean, think about it. They will even take the order you bought from Ryan that you did the digital printing, and they'll do it in nice octavo for you too.
Right.
So you can take something you bought from a digital printer digitally, take it to a printer, and they'll make it, you know, they'll print it on 11x17 so that you can fold it in half, and it always stays together, because, you know, kids can never keep things together or whatever. So, you know, don't discount and use them for your programs and stuff too. Like, I'm a small business guy, you know, so like use those. These guys are the backbone of your neighborhood, you know. So go use those guys. That's one way around some of that stuff. Like you were saying, is to offer printed. And of course, if you're somebody that needs it printed, that's a place to go too. But how about, like, obviously accepting POs and stuff? I mean, do you do that whole PO system?
I do.
Thing?
Yeah. And that's something that definitely intimidated me at first.
Sure.
Even as a teacher, I had never really heard the term purchase order until I was a teacher.
Right.
So it all seemed kind of unnecessarily complicated.
Welcome to public education, Ryan Mayer.
So being on the receiving end of that is really pretty easy. Mm-hmm. A purchase order comes in, and what that means is that the school has agreed to pay for this, let's say, 20 physical copies of your composition. They are definitely going to compensate you for that. Through their own system, they are contractually obligated. But they're not going to write the check to you until you deliver the copies and an invoice with that that says, okay, I've delivered the copies, now pay me. So that's what you do.
You'll get it 30 days later.
Yeah. And that is kind of it's a little annoying at first until you just realize that's just how this business works. That's mm-hmm. how it's done. And you get used to getting paid 30 days later, and it's not a big deal. And so I have a few different things that help me with that. First off, I've got a process and I've got templates. So I get a purchase order and I plug it into an invoice template. I save it as a PDF and send it off. And then I have an order tracking spreadsheet. And in there, I just plug in that information. And I know to check that, say, once a week or so, mm-hmm. and update it as payments come in. I mark those orders closed. If a payment doesn't come in, I can follow up and see what's going on with the delay. And,
right.
you know, just speaking honestly, like all of that seemed absolutely overwhelming at first. But the trick to any of this, including just writing a piece for the first time, is to just start doing it. And the pieces will fall into place.
Exactly.
And I think that is the entrepreneurial spirit.
Right. You don't even need a crazy website either.
Right.
I use a website called Gumroad. And Gumroad mm-hmm. allows you to host digital content. And then they take a very small percentage of each sale. So like when I sell t-shirts, I just sell them from Gumroad. You know, we have the Choirs Are Horrible game coming out pretty soon, which is we're going to do a 48-hour sale on that game. And it's going to be hosted on Gumroad. And basically they're going to put the spreadsheet together for me.
I know
they don't do POs and stuff like that. But if you're looking for like just what is the quickest, you know, what we call in the entrepreneurial world, especially the digital marketing world, what is the MVP? What's your minimum viable product, right? What is the easiest way to go out and test your theory and see if anybody wants what you have to offer? And if you just use a site like that, where you throw up a digital piece, say it's $2 a copy. I mean, if somebody orders 20 copies and they throw their credit card in there because maybe their school gives them a credit card or they get reimbursed from their school, like, you just sold 20 copies of your piece. Well, maybe that shows that you could go and host, you know, do a self-hosted WordPress website or a Squarespace with a shopping cart and that whole thing. But, like, don't put the cart before the horse. Like, you don't need a logo. You don't need mm-hmm. a website. You know, you need a Facebook account and a Gumroad page with your one piece on it and a little description that takes you 10 minutes to make. So I would just want to say that there's maybe less barriers to entry to the self-publishing world than we think there are. Because, again, it's just somebody throwing their credit card in and downloading a digital file of ones and zeros that magically becomes your piece of music. If it's something that you're interested in, Choir Nation, somebody out there is like, I might want to just try it. Just, I don't know, take one of the pieces you arranged for your choir, make it pretty, put a little cover on it, download it as a PDF, throw it on Gumroad, and see if anybody buys it. And mm-hmm. and Gumroad pays you via like automatic payment into your checking account. And if you need to do the PO route, getting an EIN number, a tax ID number from the federal government takes literally 5 minutes on the IRS website. Basically, they associate a tax ID number with your Social Security number as a sole proprietorship. And then you can send, when somebody asks for your W-9 so that they can pay you from the school district, you throw your tax ID number and your personal information on the W-9, save it as a PDF, and then anytime anybody asks you, you just send it to them in an email. I mean, yep. It's that simple, right, Ryan?
That's that almost verbatim exactly what I do. And I should say that this is something that would have been really helpful to hear about 5 years ago, because I kind of stumbled through everything that you just lined out. And you're exactly right. You just have to put something up online and see. It is so exciting when those first few sales come in. And then you know right. That this is a brand new legitimate option for me as right. A composer.
Yeah, if you sell one piece to 20, 20 copies, like you've validated that this is possible, you know.
Yeah.
And if you just feed it a little more, you give it a little more time, because when you first start out in any of these ventures, it's like 20% content, 80% marketing, you know. So so if you validated it, you could just turn up the dial on the intensity of your marketing, and you'll start actually making a little extra income. I mean, even if it, let's say it was $500 a month, like what, I'm sure people could spend that money pretty quickly in their life. So,
oh, sure.
So yeah. And if you already got the collateral sitting around, throw it up and see if it sticks. So Ryan, we're getting a little short on time now. But
sure.
I think this is really helpful. Thank you. I mean, you've given away all the secrets, but the great thing about it is that like you only, nobody ever got poor by giving, thank you Anne Frank for that one, 16-year-old words of wisdom, but no one ever got poor by giving. I know Choir Nation will return the favor. If Choir Nation, if you ever, if you think this is a helpful episode, of course, check out ryanmain.com. If I've helped you in any way, by bringing Ryan to you, would be thrilled to have you as a patron for this podcast. It's as little as $1 an episode. And that's maxes you out at maybe $7-$8 a month. That's over at Patreon, patreon.com/choirninja, all one word. Patreon.com/choirninja. It takes 2 seconds. And basically you'll just get one transaction per month. It's like an ongoing Kickstarter. Just buys me my morning coffee and helps me pay Stevie, who helps work in the Choir Nation Facebook group, and also helps me maintain the website in the in-depth show notes for every episode, which, by the way, are at choir.ninja/133. Again, that's choir.ninja/133. And you can see our sponsors there. You can support the podcast there. You can see exactly what we talked about, bullet by bullet. So Ryan, do you have any parting words of wisdom?
Yeah, I would just add that if you are a new composer or an aspiring composer, or maybe even somebody who's done it a little bit and you're just wanting to get a little bit more out of it, to feel satisfied in the process, feel free to reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to talk through this with you. And beyond that, if you see a composer who's doing something that you really admire, you can reach out to them too. And there's a good chance that they're going to want to help you. I think it's how we all get better together. And so I would just encourage you to not toil alone, but to forge those relationships as much as you can, and just speed up your process by doing that.
Great. Well, the entrepreneurial world, which is anybody that's really making it as a composer, is an entrepreneur. you know, the entrepreneurial world is a very giving world. That's why I've always loved the people that are in that world. So just like Ryan said, you know, those people understand this value first idea, that they know they have an abundance mindset. They know there's enough of the pie for everyone. They just keep making more pieces of pie. So it's a great world to be in. And I'm very happy that you're able to share with us today, Ryan. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Quiet Ninja Show. Bung, bung.